Okay, so you're knee-deep in law school, right? And there are these cases, these landmark decisions, you just know they're going to keep coming back to haunt you. In a good way, of course.
You mean like those cases that are basically the bedrock of whole legal areas?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, okay, gotta master this one. This could be everywhere. And Superintendent V. Hill, definitely one of those.
Oh, yeah, Hill. That one's from 1985. And man, it really sets the stage for how we think about due process, especially when you're dealing with the whole world of prison disciplinary proceedings.
It all boils down to this idea of the some evidence standard, which sounds simple enough, right?
Right. But then you start peeling back the layers and you realize, hold on, this is about how much proof you need to actually take away an inmate's good time credits.
And those credits, that's not some small thing.
No, not at all. That impacts their release date, their freedom. So the question we're really diving into today is, how much evidence do you need? How high is that bar? Because intuitively, you'd think taking away someone's freedom, that's a pretty big deal.
You'd think so, right? But Hill kind of throws a curveball and shows us how the courts have grappled with balancing, inmate rights with the reality of actually running a prison.
It's a tricky situation for sure.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty. What even happened in Hill? We're talking about two inmates, Hill and Crawford, at Cedar Junction, which, if you don't know, that's a Massachusetts correctional institution.
And these guys, they were accused of something pretty serious, assaulting another inmate.
Assault? Okay, so like right off the bat, things are tense.
Yeah, and the location matters too. This wasn't just anywhere in the prison, it allegedly went down in a restricted area. That becomes important later when we talk about the evidence.
Got it. So an assault in a restricted area, what did the authorities have to go on? Like, what did the disciplinary board actually see when they made their decision?
Well, their main source was the testimony of a correctional officer, Sergeant McGuire. He says he heard a commotion coming from this restricted area. Right. So he goes to check it out and finds this inmate, Stevens, who's injured. And get this, McGuire says he sees Hill and Crawford, along with another inmate, running away from the scene.
Okay, that sounds pretty incriminating.
You'd think so, but here's where it gets interesting. McGuire later writes up a report, right? He mentions he heard someone yelling, "What's going on?" a couple of times before finding Stevens, who had a black eye and was bleeding.
Okay, so the officer puts it all down in writing, but was that enough for the board?
Well, yeah, they thought so, but it gets more complex. The victim, Stevens, he denied that Hill and Crawford were the guys who attacked him.
Wait, seriously? The victim denied it.
Yeah, completely. And Hill and Crawford, they maintained their innocence the whole time.
So you've got the officer saying one thing and the victim saying another. What did the board do with that?
They sided with McGuire. They revoked 100 days of Hill and Crawford's good time credits and threw them in solitary for 15 days.
Whoa, that's a huge chunk of time.
It is. That's not a slap on the wrist. So naturally, Hill and Crawford, they appeal this decision.
Okay, makes sense, but appealing a prison disciplinary decision, that's got to be a whole other can of worms.
It is, but in this case, Massachusetts actually already had a system set up for judicial review of prison disciplinary decisions.
Oh, interesting. So the courts could actually step in and second guess what the prison board had decided.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. The state courts looked at the evidence and basically said, nope, not enough here to justify the punishment. They overturned the board's decision.
Wow. So round one goes to the inmates.
Right, but this is where the Supreme Court enters the picture. They saw this case with its conflicting accounts and the state court overturning the prison board, and they realized there was a much bigger issue at play.
Yeah, they had to figure out, okay, if courts are going to review these prison decisions, what standard should they use? How much evidence is enough to justify taking away those good time credits?
Exactly. And that's what makes Hill so important. It's not just about these two guys and their assault case. It sets a precedent that affects, well, potentially every inmate facing disciplinary action.
So what did the Supreme Court decide? What's the magic number, the amount of proof needed?
Well, they landed on the some evidence standard.
Some evidence.
Yeah, some evidence. And this is the part that always trips people up the first time they hear it, because it sounds really, really low.
It does. Like, some is a pretty vague word. How much is some?
Right. And the court, they weren't shy about it. In their majority opinion, they flat out said due process requires only that there be some evidence to support the disciplinary board's conclusion, even if that evidence is meager.
Meager. They really went there.
Yep, they did. They're basically saying, look, it doesn't have to be a slam dunk. It doesn't have to be beyond a reasonable doubt. There just has to be something there to support the board's decision.
That's pretty wild when you think about it. I mean, these are decisions that can seriously impact someone's life, their freedom.
Absolutely. And to understand why the court landed on this some evidence standard, we got to look at their reasoning. First, they acknowledge that good time credits, once they're earned, represent a liberty interest, and that's protected by the Due Process Clause. They cited an earlier case, Wolf v. McDonald, to back that up.
Okay, so inmates have a right to due process here. But how does that square with some evidence?
Well, here's the thing. The court also pointed out that prisons are, well, prisons. They're unique, often volatile environments. They said, listen, if courts get too involved in scrutinizing every single disciplinary decision, it'll bog down the whole system. It undermines the authority of prison officials.
I guess that makes sense. Prison guards need to be able to maintain order, and maybe sometimes that means making quick decisions based on limited information.
Exactly. It's about balancing those competing interests. And in the case of Hill, the court specifically latched onto Sergeant McGuire's testimony.
The officer who saw them running away.
Yeah. They said, look, he heard the commotion, found the injured inmate, and then saw Hill and Crawford fleeing from a restricted area where there shouldn't have been other inmates. To them, that was enough, some evidence for the board to conclude they were involved in the assault, even if it wasn't a smoking gun.
Okay, so even though the victim denied it, even though Hill and Crawford said they were innocent, the officer's account, as shaky as it might seem, was enough to meet this super low bar.
That's how the court applied it in this specific case. Now, there's another interesting wrinkle here. One of the justices, Justice Stevens, he agreed with the final decision, meaning he thought Hill and Crawford were rightfully disciplined. He even agreed with the some evidence standard overall, but he had a problem with how the Supreme Court got there.
What do you mean?
Well, Stevens argued that the Supreme Court shouldn't have been the ones digging into the evidence and deciding if it met the some evidence standard. He thought they overstepped their bounds. He said, send it back to the Massachusetts State Court, let them apply the standard.
Oh, so he's saying the Supreme Court should have stuck to their lane, so to speak, and focused on the big picture legal questions rather than getting into the weeds of the specific facts of the case.
Exactly. It's a subtle distinction, but it shows how even when justices agree on the outcome, they can have different ideas about the court's role.
That's something we got to keep in mind, right? Because
right, yeah.
This some evidence standard, it seems like it leaves a lot open to interpretation.
It definitely does. It's not like, you know, a bright line rule. And that's why Hill is so debated, because it raises this fundamental question. Is some evidence truly enough to take away someone's freedom, especially when you consider the power dynamics in prison?
I mean, it's not like inmates have the same resources as, say, someone facing criminal charges in the outside world.
Exactly. So how do you balance protecting inmates from arbitrary decisions with giving prison officials the leeway they need to run things? That's the tightrope Hill walks.
Yeah, and it's a tightrope that has implications for tons of cases that came after.
Oh, absolutely. Hill gets cited all the time. Like, there's a later case, Sandin v. Connor, that kind of builds on Hill when it talks about what constitutes a liberty interest for inmates.
So if you're going to practice law, especially anything touching on prisons and inmate rights, Hill is required reading.
For sure. It really boils down to this. The Supreme Court said the Constitution doesn't require evidence that logically precludes any other conclusion, just some evidence. And that's a pretty powerful statement.
So as we wrap things up, I guess the big takeaway for our listeners is that in the world of prison discipline, the bar for evidence is set pretty low.
Yeah, it is. And that has some pretty significant consequences for how justice plays out in these institutions.
Definitely food for thought.
Yeah.
Especially when we consider, you know, the vast power differential between inmates and prison authorities.
It makes you wonder, right? Is some evidence really enough to safeguard fairness when someone's freedom is on the line? Or do we need a higher standard in these specific settings?
Yeah, that's a question I don't think Hill fully answers, but it certainly lays the groundwork for the ongoing debate.
It does, and it's a debate worth having, especially as future lawyers who might find themselves navigating these very issues.
For sure. Well, thanks for breaking all this down. It's definitely given me and hopefully all our listeners a lot to think about.
Glad to be here. It's always a good time diving deep into these landmark cases.
Absolutely. And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Superintendent V. Hill.